I put together the one with the Wampa Cave.
Oh, okay.
I just had like a snow speeder and a Wampa Cave. And, you know, it was like a half hour. It was like a half hour build. That's what they say. Oh man, that was a good build. Yeah, it's a great build.
I don't think it's not really a build because you can take those pieces and rearrange them at any time.
Yeah, okay. That's a funny joke about game systems.
Oh,
right, okay.
Oh.
All right, I'm sorry. It took so long that I forgot to laugh. It's not like that's so funny I forgot to laugh, but I literally was like, "Oh, joke." Oh shit, I skipped a step.
The audio takes extra time, plus the humor takes extra time from Chicago.
I'm Zach.
I'm Riff.
And I'm Kevin.
And it's time for another episode of Video Games Hot Dog, episode number 74? 74.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it says. How you guys been?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm fine. It's early. We're doing this during day.
Yeah.
We couldn't record last night because my mom and my grandpa were suddenly in town. We had made vague plans about them coming into town, and then suddenly I get a text from my mom. My mom knows how to text.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I should ever text your mom, Kevin, and see if she wants a date.
No, I have been specifically encouraging my mom away from like phones that can text because I have this sort of dire premonition that if she learns how to text, I will be doing a lot of tech support.
About texting? Or I think your real worry is that she will accidentally sext you.
Oh.
So here's what you have to do. Oh. You just have to put her in your phone as somebody other than mom. So when that accidentally happens, just put her in there as random drunk girl. although that might get weird when you like try to call her. Oh, I just called some random drunk girl last night to wish her a happy Mother's Day. what have you been up to, Kevin?
I have been working on Word Realms pretty much every waking moment for the past week. I've not left the house other than to like buy some food. So yeah, I'm a bored.
What kind of food did you buy?
Well, I bought some hot chocolate because it's getting fucking cold here in Chicago.
That isn't food. That is not food.
If beer is food, then hot chocolate is totally food.
Who says beer is food?
The Egyptians?
No, I don't think that they said beer was food.
Well, okay,
I think
they said it in Egyptian.
You could use beer instead of food and not die quite as fast.
I've been buying some tacos. I had a burrito the other day.
I made a breakfast burrito for breakfast yesterday.
Oh yeah? Did you was it like pancakes and hash browns and waffles?
No, I can't deal with a recipe that complicated. I fried two eggs and put them in a tortilla.
Have I not tried to explain to you, Kevin, potatoes are not a fucking ingredient in a thing that is wrapped in bread like pancakes? A potatoes sandwich makes no sense. Just like a potatoes burrito makes no sense.
I mean, in Pittsburgh, they put the French fries on the sandwich.
Also makes no sense.
That's good,
why,
though.
No, that's why whenever I go to Pittsburgh, I immediately starve to death.
I like having like potato chips on like a tuna fish sandwich.
That is good.
Right? Like the texture is awesome.
You guys, I don't want to do this podcast with you guys anymore.
I mean, it's not like we're eating while we're talking. That would probably make for some bad audio.
Yeah, but it's amazing. It's amazing to me that you guys can talk at all, because of how horrible the experience of eating must be for you guys. Like, I cannot imagine that even if you started chewing on a potato sandwich a month ago, the last time you had one, that you would be done chewing it by now.
It's like eating nothing. It's great.
Huh.
I mean, I do like my
couple slices of raw potato on Wonder Bread.
Yeah, I like my mayo.
Put a little mayonnaise on
raw potato. Raw potato would be okay on a sandwich.
Okay. So cooked potato is not acceptable.
Not on a sandwich. You could have some. So that, okay, so like if you had potato chips, but yeah. not like what you think of as potato chips, but like pickle chips, just slices. Did they ever, can you pickle a potato?
I don't know.
I mean, it seems like somebody would have done that if it was a thing that you could do productively. It's sort of like.
It might be too starchy and they kind of dissolve weird.
It could be that, or it could be that they just don't need it as much. Like you can store potatoes for a pretty long time just independent.
Oh, so nobody tried?
Yeah, but I mean, you can
store
pig's feet for a really long time, or hard-boiled eggs. Did you guys ever eat a hard-boiled egg from one of those jars at the bar?
No.
No, but I did buy a jar of pickled egg once, and pickled eggs, mm-hmm. plural, and it was, that's a weird thing.
I remember years ago Roy trying to make pickled eggs by just peeling some hard-boiled eggs and putting them in a jar of pickle juice. And just leaving them there, and no matter how long we left them there, they still just tasted like hard-boiled eggs with pickle juice kind of on the outside of them. I mean, which was pretty good.
Yeah,
is pickle juice actually what they brine them in, or is it like, or do they do some sort of brining and then they like put like some?
I don't know. You'd end up with like a weird chicken and egg problem because how did they make the first pickles if they needed pickle juice to make the pickles?
Right.
I mean, I guess the first pickles, somebody could have, like, found them in a cave.
Well,
they were remnants of some prior civilization.
Here's my question, I guess. Is
time travel.
Do they pickle cucumbers or whatever in a giant vat and then bottle that mixture? Or do they have just cucumbers, put them in jars with the brine, seal them, and then they don't sell them until, like, 3 months later? Like...
Does the pickling process result in any like waste gas? Like, because if so, then you'd have to put it in something that you could vent.
I know that a lot of pickling involves cooking the jars in such a way that they vacuum seal.
That's how canning works. I don't know if that's how pickling works.
I think that pickling does off gas. Because I know when you pickle sauerkraut, like when you pickle cabbage to make sauerkraut, you have to be
I think you're just thinking of when you eat sauerkraut.
That's also true.
Yeah, and by sauerkraut, are you thinking of beans?
No.
Beans are not the only thing in the world that causes farts.
Because anything that you eat that
beans
is
beans cause farts, but not everything that causes farts is beans.
What's up, Socrates? you got any more? You got any more syllogisms to lay on me?
What have you been up to, Zach? What has been filling your life?
I went to an arcade game party. I went to a party at a guy's house that had an arcade in his house.
How was that?
It was pretty fun.
Did you have anything cool?
His games sort of were older, an older style of game, older era of arcade games that I'm super. He had Donkey Kong and Donkey Kong Jr. and Gorf.
Okay.
And Robotron. I played a bunch of Robotron. I went from being really, really terrible at Robotron to winning second place in a Robotron tournament.
Wow.
Over the course of about 15 games of Robotron.
You were just sharking them.
Yeah, I was. Although I was still not very good at Robotron by the end of it. I came in second with 1/8 as many points as the guy in first. So it turns out in Robotron, you really... To get a high score, you really need to rescue those dudes because, like, you get 1,000 points for the first dude that you rescue, and then 2,000, and then 3, 4, and then 5, 5, 5, 5, 5 over time. And so levels on which there are a bunch of those humans, like, that watching the guy who got the crazy high score play, he would, like, when the level first renders... All you can see are the humans, and the robots pop in on top of them. So you sort of like, all right, where am I going? Hmm. Like, where do I need to head?
Oh, wow.
Which has the highest density of humans to rescue. You also get a ton of extra guys, which is a thing that I never realized about Robotron. But playing up to like 100,000 points, I want to say that I had like 10 dudes.
Wow.
Interesting.
Yeah. You just you really get a lot of extra guys.
That seems extreme for an arcade.
Well, it's still super fucking hard. I mean, I would say that the game in which I scored 100,000 points probably lasted a minute and a half or 2 minutes.
Wow.
So it's really, yeah, it is still a brutally hard game, but you can get good at it. I think maybe part of what helped was bringing hours and hours and hours of Binding of Isaac to bear
Solar Fox too, actually.
I mean, Robotron is more sort of twin sticky, a million things on the screen to avoid. I mean, I suppose that I could have been just increasing without knowing it my hand eye coordination by playing. Although I haven't even been playing that much Solar Fox.
See, Mom, video games are good for you.
Yeah. Well, I don't have that
so
problem.
So that you can play other video games.
A problem justifying that. Like, look, this is our jobs now. I bet you feel like a big dummy for telling us to go outside and learn how to talk to girls. Plus, we all have girls that like video games.
Yeah.
Pretty sweet. That's we're grown-ups.
A good synergy.
I still can't get used to it.
Mm-hmm. If we want to eat a bugs on a log, we could do it with an entire fucking stalk of celery if we want to, and no one can stop us. We can stay up all night listening to Phil Collins records if we want to.
I was eating chips and salsa for dinner the other day, and one of my housemates said, is that your dinner? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, really? And I'm like, listen, I'm an adult. I can do whatever the fuck I want. And
yeah, I pretty much had cookies for dinner last night and potato chips for breakfast this morning. I know what you had for breakfast this morning.
Every morning this week, I've walked into Riff's office and announced with what I was breaking my fast. And every morning it was two pretzels and a ramekin of nuts.
Wow.
You need some carbs to get your brain firing on all of the hemispheres.
Yeah.
You don't want it all lopsided. Just be like, oh, man, I wrote this poem diagonally on this sheet of paper. Or, man, all of my math is off by 45 degrees.
This morning, I about 10 minutes before we started recording, I started drinking a Guinness. So, yeah, breakfast for champions.
Huh. Did you start drinking beer before? You are one of those assholes. You are one of those assholes who can drink a beer with lunch and then not wind up in a Tijuana gutter the following morning.
I guess so.
Not because of alcoholism or anything, just coincidentally.
They can't afford gutters in Tijuana. You're already drinking.
Well, I mean, not anymore because I finished the beer.
I mean, I guess our listeners don't know what
don't
time
care.
It is.
They don't know.
If they're listening to this podcast at 6 in the morning, they're going to be like, oh, I can't believe these guys are drunk at 6 in the morning.
Yeah.
It's always video games hot dog time.
Yeah. You guys been playing any video games?
Not really. Just WoW. I mean, that's a video game, but nothing new.
Have you learned anything about WoW? Have you discovered anything new in WoW?
They,
do you have any anecdotes?
Actually, yeah, kind of. It is impressive in this expansion how great a degree they are moving towards making sure everybody gets to see the raid content.
Really?
Because, yeah, this time around, daily quests give you the Valor Point tokens that you use to get epic gear with, and almost every one of the factions, the reputation grind factions that gives dailies, sells one or two slots worth of epic gear, and you can get them even after revered status. You don't have to grind them all the way to exalted to get it. So you can get
okay, but that's just getting geared up for raid.
Well,
content.
Yeah, but you can getting geared up lets
you use the raid finder.
Lets you get into the raid finder, every raid is going to be in the raid finder this time, unlike Cataclysm that just had one.
Well, I think they introduced the raid finder late in Cataclysm cycle.
I mean, that's the thing.
But it's interesting. Without
are pug raids
you can,
viable? Is my question. You can.
I mean, I think they're dumbing down the raids to make them viable to pug.
The raid finder raids are simplified.
It is a third difficulty level. Right there's what there's 25 man and then 10 man and then 10 man raid finder is that
yeah and
how it
the
works?
And every raid loot drop has three versions that you get of it, depending on what version of the raid you got it from, and they have different
itemization. Like cooler looking or anything, or are
they're
they
often
just
a different color?
Okay.
Other than that, they're the same models.
That's cool.
So here's
maybe
my question.
I should keep playing World of Warcraft.
A dumbed down raid is when you say seeing the content, like you get to see the spaces and the models, but you're not really seeing the same fights. Right, because I'm guessing that there's like less environmental hazards, and the like bosses have less damage or have less attacks.
The bosses have less hit points. Their attacks tend to be either less damaging, or if there is like one ultra attack that the boss has, it doesn't use it in that version, or it's a single target instead of an area of effect or something like that. Just generally they've done stuff so that the raid is possible with a group of 25 total strangers.
I mean, for somebody who cares about that, like, if I could have done an easy mode of Karazhan, I would have said, I have seen Karazhan.
Sure. Yeah, right.
Right?
And you still get to see the whatever cutscenes and story and dialogue come with the raid events.
Hmm. What do you think about this, Kevin? You sound dubious.
Well, I mean, it depends a lot on how it's implemented, right? Because if the encounters have the same sort of look and feel, they're just like numerically different, then I guess it's okay in terms of like feeling like you've actually seen the content. But if they really are like fundamentally different fights, which at least in, you know, back when I was playing a couple years ago, back in what, Cataclysm? Before Cataclysm.
You didn't play in Cataclysm. Outlands. You didn't even play in Wrath.
Outlands.
It has been like 5 years since you played World of Warcraft.
It's been
Kevin.
A while. So
I know you look back on it like a junkie looks back on the 70s, like it was yesterday.
Heroics were completely different animals than non-heroics. And this wasn't raid content. This was just like five-man content. But like bosses acted completely differently in a lot of situations. There were like completely different and new kinds of attacks and stuff. And it was like a different experience. There were like a bunch of trash mobs, like they were just like new kinds of encounters.
But,
and stuff.
But I would argue that a heroic will even have an extra boss that you don't get to see.
Right. So like
the normal version.
That to me is like a different. I mean, you could go in and see the spaces of a
right. Well, to you, a fight with fundamentally different mechanics is going to seem like different content because that is what you care about. Like that's what you're in it for.
Yeah.
Is to see like what did the clever designer man's try to throw at me in this, as opposed to like, whoa, check out this sweet fucking build ding.
I was thinking about that in Karazhan, like there might be some doors that you have to open or something, but did you ever consider just going in there and using one of those like elixirs of dream vision to just look around?
I have not done that, but there is a similar thing that you can do once when Cataclysm came out and they made it so that you can fly everywhere. The areas of Ankaraj that were previously only instances now exist as actual places in the world that you can go and fly into. And there's no mobs or anything there, but you can see all the geometry.
Huh.
It was kind of cool.
Huh.
Well, so they just made like an empty copy of it that you get into if you don't go in the gates.
Uh-huh.
Huh. Wow. That's interesting, actually. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's kind of how the whole world was before you could fly.
Right.
Right. So just so that you would be able to see it from a distance. Like if you managed to get into Orgrimmar without going through the front door.
Well, that was just a big hole in the ground.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Hmm.
If you climbed over the wall, it was just a giant hole. There was very little. That was actually.
I thought it was just like Orgrimmar with less detail and no textures.
It's just the out. I think it was just a hole in the ground and like exterior walls that you could see from outside. Yeah.
Orgrimmar, you wouldn't even recognize Orgrimmar anymore.
Probably not.
It's pretty different.
I tell you, those goblins moved in and there went the neighborhood. There's a balloon, some grease. I don't know, fishing quests.
I haven't really had time to play much in the way of games, other than like stuff on my phone while I'm like waiting for a
step. Did you say step on my phone?
Stuff.
That's a really terrible iOS.
It's a sequel to Move the Box.
Yeah.
Step on my phone.
But I
played, man, if that was like a Johann Sebastian Joust.
Oh.
All right, we make an iPhone game that everybody runs the game on their phone, and the object of the game is to knock the other player's phones out of their hands and then stomp on it. It has to detect like a serious jolt in the accelerometer to knock you out of the game.
And you have to not be wearing socks or anything so the capacitive touchscreen can sense your feet.
Oh. Yeah, it's got to be like the guy in what was it? The guy in Choke? Was that the Chuck Palahniuk novel where the protagonist had the sort of like not exactly a fetish because it wasn't sexual, but he would build these elaborate model houses. Like just plastic models of houses, like railroad scale stuff, and then take his shoes off and just stomp on them until they were rubble and he was just bloody and spent the next few days picking little mailmen out of his feet.
I don't remember that, but my memory is terrible.
What a great hobby.
So. Yeah. It might not have been Choke. It might have been a different one.
Yeah.
You know, it was pretty horrifying. Did you ever read Guts, that short story that... you probably shouldn't, because once you read it, you can never ever unread it.
One of those, huh?
Yeah.
Have you seen the new SimCity screenshots?
Oh man, I saw a video of a guy playing it and talking about it, and Jesus Christ, am I excited about that!
It looks so good.
Yeah,
apparently the mechanics are more back to like SimCity 2000.
Yeah,
except that
apparently not so. Like, you don't really have to like set up all the water pipes and all the electricity and stuff. Like, it's just, you have to have a power plant and you have to do a little bit of stuff, but like electricity and water are automatically installed on roads.
Oh, huh.
Okay.
Well, that's fair because that's how I always did it anyway.
Like, it simulates it down to the individual citizen level, right? Huh. So. Your city doesn't just have like a little animated GIF of some ants at a busy intersection. Your city has a car for every person that lives there.
I heard that there's no terrain change tools in it. Like, you can't like deflate a hill or build up to make a hill. And they consider the terrain that you're set up with as being part of like a puzzle feature of figuring out where to build stuff to deal with the hills that you've got.
Given, you should watch this video. I think actually it was just randomly linked to from Metafilter this morning. I don't remember where I saw it.
I think Rock Paper Shotgun has
that's
a video.
That sounds
it might not
right.
be the same.
I almost posted it to the Video Games Hot Dog Twitter feed because I was so excited about it. But then I thought, eh.
Plus, it's so pretty. The screenshots I've seen look just like those tilt shift photos where people take photographs
started on this.
And they do whatever that focal blurring thing is that makes it look like a tabletop model.
It's not tilt
it looks
shift.
Just like that.
It That's just what everyone
whatever
calls
it.
It can
the
be
thing
tilt
that
shift.
People
it
call it.
It depends on what they're shooting.
But yeah, it looks fantastic. It looks like photographs of like model railroad buildings that people have actually built.
Cool.
Yeah. I'm real excited. It's kind of funny. Every time something that didn't look very good came up on the screen, it would pop up this thing in the corner that was like early prototype build, not final assets or something. Just to stop that, head that off at the pass.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I have not been excited about a SimCity game since SimCity 2000. And this one is suddenly like the fact that every individual person is simulated in it. So like, this guy needs to go find a job, and so you build like a store, and then he goes and he gets a job at the store, and then the store is an actual like activated commercial building, so then other people can go there and buy stuff. And I don't know that it depends on how far they get into that, right? If you have to start providing parking and shit, then that would really suck.
I mean, that's the thing, like, you know, there are certain levels of abstraction that are pleasant, and then it rapidly becomes too complicated to enjoy. So
the things I never really understood how to fix traffic problems in in the earlier SimCity games. And I think if you're actually seeing the traffic jams that consist of the individual agents that are experiencing the traffic jams, then you will have a much better idea of like, oh, well, okay, there's a lot of people trying to get from this place to this place, and they're real. Like, it is a real thing, not just a, there is like some number that the game has determined that is amount of traffic in between some particular commercial locus. Like, you can look at their cars and see where they work and think, oh, well, if this guy, you know,
real is a funny use of that term. Like, they live inside your computer. They're little people that live inside your computer.
Sure. But you know what I mean?
Yeah,
right.
They're much more less abstract.
The traffic on a given road in SimCity 2000, I don't know that it was really comprehensible to the player.
It was more
why
of a system
is there traffic
than a,
here
than like an identifiable like.
Yeah, but it's an opaque person. System. It's an opaque system that is boiled down to something that isn't necessarily what it seems like.
Right.
Like if you see that there is a traffic jam at this intersection and you mouse over all of the cars and it is all people from factory X on their way home to neighborhood Y, then you know, well, why don't I just build a back road from factory X to neighborhood Y? Whereas if you don't know, like, I have no idea how much of that SimCity 2000 was doing in the background. Right. Yeah. And so if it's just like this intersection has a lot of traffic because it is in between this aggregated average of commercial space and this aggregated average of residential space, but you don't know what, you know, I mean, I guess you could just imagine it. And then the way that the system plays out in your imagination is either you got it right and, oh, everybody's excited about this new bypass road, or you got it wrong and it's like, oh, damn, mayor, stop solving the traffic
With a town population of like thousands of people or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people, isn't that going to get kind of out of control?
It looks as though the scale is much, much smaller.
So it's Sim Town
of this,
not Sim.
Yeah, Metropolis. Like they started with what seemed like, you know, the amount of shit that you would have in a starting city. The city the guy built looked pretty satisfying as far as like you get enough money to start with to build this amount of stuff, and it had, I don't know, 40 people. Running around individually, and that probably, you know, they probably in the fiction of the game, they probably still represent X number of people, but they are X number of people that live in this house, or they live in the neighborhood.
Okay.
They live in the residential neighborhood that this residential house represents.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, like, there aren't, like, they all get in the same a car that represents 10 cars that are always in the same place.
Right.
The entire city is clowns.
Yeah, sure. No, I mean, that's the opposite of a clown car. That's one dude in 10 cars. Yeah. That's, I'm not going to get any further into knowing anything about that. So.
What have you been playing, Zach?
I'm pretty excited about that. I've been playing imaginary future SimCity. So one of the games that I played at this arcade man's house, he had this multi-game system that had a few games on it that I'd never heard of before, some of which I played and I didn't really get. There's one called, I kind of wanted to look up Pac-Man Plus to see what the fuck, because it's like Pac-Man except there are different power-ups that are in the middle of the screen that you go pick up, and a lot of them do things like
grow really big.
No, I think that's Super Pac-Man.
Oh, okay,
there was one Pac-Man variant with like doors and stuff, but Pac-Man Plus seemed to be a Pac-Man. It was Pac-Man, except it had cutscenes. I don't remember if the original Pac-Man had cutscenes, but every once in a while, when you ate a cherry or whatever, like the maze would become invisible, or the ghosts would become invisible, or you would become invisible.
These are not power-ups.
Yeah, that's not power-up. That's like a, is this like an allegory? Like, this is what happens if you eat too many ice cream sundaes. Is
you go
effectively
blind.
Yeah, you'll go blind. They'll have to amputate your eyes because of diabetes, and then you won't know. You'll just be wandering around, and the ghosts
being attacked by
ghosts. And but the one thing that I played that was sort of interesting was a Dig Dug 2. I did not realize that there was a Dig Dug 2. And they apparently, I don't know, maybe they wished that they had named Dig Dug like Inflate Dug, because in the second one he still inflates things, but he does zero digging.
Oh.
It weird. Is you are on like it's a sort of an isometric. It's not technically isometric because there are no, you know, 30-degree angles in it, but it's like a top down. It's like an angled. You're looking at like these tile based islands, and you move freely on them. But there are points on a grid where there are like these, I have no idea what they are. They're like little circles on the ground, and then there are like cracks running between some of the circles and other circles or the edges.
Oh, I've seen this. Okay.
And if you're standing on one of those circles, you have another button that you can push that will create a crack in one of the four compass directions if you're facing that direction. And then if an entire section of the island gets cracked, mm-hmm. like a contiguous border of cracks on it, it will disappear. It will like sink into the water, taking with it everything that's on it. So it's like a fundamentally different game. It gets a little weird. There is probably some easy to get your head around algorithm as to what part of it is going to fall into the ocean when you cut it off. But I got burned by it enough times that I was like,
it's okay. Not just the part that you're not on.
Or no, because I've definitely had the part that I'm the smallest
chunk?
Part.
Yeah.
But I've done things that made multiple chunks fall off, and I don't exactly understand how that, including the one that I was standing on at times. So I don't know. Maybe something else happened. Maybe one of those Figars.
Those darn Figars.
Also, what were their names? Figar was the
Figar
green thing
and Pooka.
Pooka.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's like a frat boy's necklace.
Sure. Except it was spelled with two
O's. And one of the prequels to Rygar. I think those necklaces are like P-U-C-C-A.
Maybe.
A-S-P-C-A.
Yeah.
So I played Dig Dug 2. And then I played a bunch of Dishonored. Not a bunch of Dishonored. I played the first couple of levels of Dishonored. And
from what you're saying, it sounds pretty good.
It is pretty good. I think that Kevin in particular would really like it a lot.
So thus
it's
I'm
like
not
it's like
play.
Deus Ex. No, I think you're not allowed to play it for a while. It is like a steampunk. It's like a steampunk Deus Ex. The way, like, I'm playing it on easy because it specifically said that the stealth is more forgiving to play it on easy, and it's actually making me want to play it without killing anybody. Like, the environments are cool enough that it's a sort of a, like, it's an interesting challenge. There is magic that really supports stealth playstyle. Like, if you see a guy, and because of the way he's facing, you can't sneak up to being behind him, you can, like, you have this, like, short-range teleport that you can use to just get behind him. And it doesn't make any noise, so you can just do that, and then you can strangle him, and, yeah. And then I accidentally killed a guy because I didn't realize that tossing his corpse off of, like, a 5-foot drop would kill him.
No.
And he did, because I tossed him off, and then he, like, just turned into ashes and evaporated, because I'm like, oh, right, I got that thing where if I kill somebody who has never known about me, that they turn into ashes instead of leaving a corpse behind. So that's a pretty cool power. It definitely seems like there are skill lines. They're not really lines. There are a fairly small number of skills. You collect these runes, of which there are a fixed number. And it tells you how many are available in a level, so you can replay levels to get ones that you didn't get. I haven't ever done that, so I don't know what it does. Like, I don't know if it starts you in whatever, like, configuration and state you were in when you ran it. Or, like, you know, or, like, if you burn through level 2.
If it's a retry or just going back.
Yeah, if you burn through level 2 and then play level 3... and then you go back to level 2 and get better, get powered up more, and then you replay level 3 again, does it put you in the best cadet? Like, I don't know. I haven't tried replaying it. My plan was to play one mission and I ended up playing for like 3 hours because I was just being really thorough about finding everything. You get this, man, it has so many parts of so many games that I like. You get this like artifact that's like a sort of a like a clockwork cybernetic heart. That's like, I don't know if it's, you know, made of leather or something's actual heart or what, but it will, when you have it in your hand, it will show you the location of the actual game relevant hidden things in the level, which are like these charms that you can equip and then the runes that you use to buy your sort of magical abilities. And if you like activate it, if you're pointed at a person, it will whisper a secret to you about the person. Whoa. And if you're just out in an environment, it will whisper a secret about the environment. So like about whatever location you're in. So it's just this huge, huge amount of content.
That's spooky as hell.
Yeah. And there are books everywhere. Like they're actually pretty good. They're not like the sort of horseshit Skyrim books. Yeah.
There is a link off of Penny Arcade with some of the developers giving tips for things to remember if you're trying to do a full no-kill run. And one of them was the point that if you stand and listen to a couple of characters just eavesdrop on some guys without being seen, sometimes they will like give the like the combination to locks or tell you about, not tell you, but the conversation will arrive talking at about like a hidden trap door that you wouldn't otherwise have known about or something. So you can get a lot of actual useful information by standing around and listening to guys
managed to work that random in NPC naturally gibberish. Because that kind of bothers
as
me.
As opposed
when,
to that, like, with the,
when, like,
the vending machine is really, that vending machine is really light or whatever kind of talk. Like, telling, yeah. Do you remember that?
Yep. but I mean, because that's something that will really take me out of it. Like, if I'm overhearing a conversation between two dudes, and then one of them talks about a combination to a combination lock, I'm like, oh right, I'm a video game.
So, how you doing this morning, Earl? Oh, you know, I'm pretty good. Password to my secret vault is 4281.
And for whatever reason, I woke up with only half my usual amount of hit points.
I mean, also, the number of times that usernames and passwords were sent in unencrypted emails in Deus Ex or whatever, it was like, ah, Jesus Christ, people.
Well, that was a long time ago. They hadn't invented security yet.
I guess.
Almost every combination to something has been, like, written down in huge numbers on something. Like, there was one in the first level. You find this thing that's like, if you want to know the combination to the safe, just look to your whiskey in the note. And then there's like there's a shelf covered with bottles of whiskey that just has the combination written on it. And you don't have to move the bottles of whiskey. If you're looking for the combination to this safe, I wrote it in huge numbers right next to the safe where anyone can see it.
Man,
I wish that was a better puzzle.
I would really like to see a game, a Deus Ex style game, where trying to hack a computer and the actual password is written on a post-it note underneath the keyboard.
I was just thinking that. Like that would be more realistic to me, where if you're in like an office situation where like everything you need to know is just on a post-it, like on the monitor or whatever, right? Like,
I mean, that becomes less realistic if you're like infiltrating a top secret government installation where they actually have
maybe,
you know, or say like an organization where they've already demonstrated in an earlier cutscene that they have no compunctions against just murdering their own henchmen if they fuck something up. Like, and it just seems like literally everything that happens during business hours at this place would be enough to get the henchmen killed. I mean, you know, it's becoming more and more a thing that like games will lampshade, right? Like, there was something in the secret world where it was just like, you know, it's bad enough that we send unencrypted emails. Do not print this. And it's like on a sheet of paper that you find in a guy's.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah. Fucking Dishonored. There was what I'm almost certain was a deliberate reference to Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines. You don't have a map, which kind of same as Deus Ex, right? And it wasn't a big deal. Like, I never felt like I was hamstrung by the fact that I didn't have a map.
Right.
So far, in the first couple missions, they've done a pretty good job of, like, making the environments variegated enough that you don't, it's like, oh, wait, which hallway am I in again?
Okay, yeah, you can tell where you are just by how it looks instead of...
I have no idea how much of the actual space of the first level I explored. Hmm. Like, I did all of the quests, and I got all of the like, collectibles except for one that I just was a type of thing that I didn't even know about. It was like, you found 0 out of 1 Sokolov paintings.
Like, oh, gee. That's kind of weird. Had nothing ever told you before what a Sokolov painting was or why it was important?
Yeah, I don't think so. Huh. I mean, it might just be important because of that. I don't, you know, the ones that actually have an effect on the game. The little there. Some of them that you get are these charms that are just sort of little passive bonuses that you can have X number of equipped at once. And then, like I said, the other ones are the runes that you get that are just are your skill points. But there are maps, like when you're out in the city, it's like, here's a map of this neighborhood, and you go up and interact with it, and it gives you like a more useful close-up, zoomed-in map of it, like Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines. There are also signs in places for a prosthetic limb specialist, which that might have just been independent, but I think, yeah, no, that's that seems like these people played a lot of Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines.
Unless you can actually get a prosthetic limb at some point, right? Like...
You can get all kinds of stuff.
Steampunk prosthetic limb.
Yeah.
With like a vent on the side.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a pretty good game. I did not actually manage to beat the first real level without killing anybody. Because I don't really know. There must have been another way for me to do this, but there's a guy that you can rescue, and he's just with these thugs. They're not like guards, and they never leave this door. I guess I might have been able to just, like, sleep dart all of them. But it's sort of like Deus Ex, where it's like, oh, sleep darts, huh? It'd be real handy if you had 5 times as many of those as you have.
Yeah,
so that's pretty good. And I think, apart from that, just, like, FTL, same old, same old. And then I actually have been playing, since I got my new phone, I've been playing a whole bunch more Field Runners 2.
Oh, yeah.
Because with it faster and with the load times reduced, it's a lot more feasible for me to just, like, play something to try it on a higher difficulty level to earn more stars, to get more towers, so I can earn more stars, so I can get more towers.
I played a little bit of that. I might go back to it and play a little bit more now that they've improved the load times and crashing and stuff. I mean, I don't enjoy tower defense games, but this one is attractive enough and has enough going on that it's interesting enough that I might play it a bit in spite of it.
I like it. I think it's pretty good.
Did you guys ever try that toy box game that one of our listeners suggested?
No. I was looking through that when I was gathering listeners' mail today.
Yeah, it's like a shooter on the left-hand side of the screen and like a very simple... like a falling block puzzle on the right-hand side of the screen that you're playing simultaneously. And basically, as you shoot enemies of different colors, some of them give you blocks that you can then put in the puzzle on the right. And as you match,
like Henry Hatsworthy?
Maybe. As you match 3, it gives you power-ups back on the left-hand side of the screen. And if you get a cascade, you get an extra life and some extra points. And the levels are the same. You play the same level over and over again for any given week, and there is a leaderboard that compares everybody who's played that week. So you can see sort of how you do compared to everybody else who's playing sort of in real
time. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's like a neat combination of systems. I'm not very good at it. I have a really hard time setting up cascades, which is like what you really need to do to like... get high scores and make a lot of progress or whatever. Because if you just start, there's only 4-color blocks and you have 4 columns, and if you just stack them to get the like most basic match 3 power up thing, the game gets really hard and fast on the left hand side of the screen, and you don't get a lot of points to like do well scoring wise. You need to like figure out which blocks you can get, make sure to shoot them in the right order, and then build up your cascades to get like just tons of extra bonus points and stuff.
Huh.
It's like
it sounds kind of like weird... it reminded me of that Mercury roguelike that our buddy Chris told me about a while back, where it's in seasons where whoever gets the highest score on a given season gets to determine what the rules are and I don't know how much.
Never played that, but I heard about it.
It's the game itself is pretty. It's sort of. I don't want to say it's like dissatisfying as a roguelike because it is an arcade roguelike is how it's very simple system wise, and you have a limited number of turns to finish a level, and I never really figured out a way that didn't make it very luck based whether you actually got to the end of a level or not, but yeah, the idea of there being these rolling minor competitions is a thing that I think is really nice.
Yeah.
In games in general.
Reminds me of Nomic. If it made it such that instead of like the winner determines the rules for the next season, if the winner could add or modify a rule that would continue to exist for the rest of all the seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And so the game just becomes more and more intricate and different as time goes on.
I think that's fun if everybody starts from the beginning. It becomes, with games where people are coming in and out over time, that becomes less ideal, I think.
Well, perhaps that's true. I mean, maybe you could set it up as...
Did you ever like go and try to read some of those like 10-year-long game rule sets? Like they were just out of control.
Yeah, yeah. They were crazy.
So.
I was involved in one for a while, and I still have a copy of the rule set somewhere because every now and then I get into my mind to try and develop it into an actual board game, but it hasn't really happened yet.
Huh. I played one other game that one of our listeners mentioned called Second Wind, which is like a really very, very basic sort of... I don't know how you'd describe it. It's loathing-like in some ways. It's a flash game.
It's sort of It struck me as kind of progress questy.
Well,
like you didn't have any control over the encounters that you got.
True.
I only messed with it for a couple of minutes because I was like, I clicked on Casey Wiederman's link as I was like about to leave to go do something, and so I only played it for maybe 1 minute.
You don't have any control over the encounters that you get, but there's some strategic choices that you make, whether you like spend resources to upgrade weapons or buy potions or whatever.
I played a little bit of that. The first two encounters I had were both blacksmiths, offered me the chance to upgrade my weapon, except I had no money. So I was like, click, oh, click, oh.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's like super well designed, but it's kind of interesting. There's a lot of unlockable character classes for doing various different things and stuff. So,
I wasn't sure if like it was a game that presented itself such that I wasn't sure if the character classes were a joke or not. Like if the buttons actually did anything in combat.
They do. Yeah. I don't know why. Like, I didn't play it enough to understand why you would do anything other than attack, because like. Blocking the opponent's attack seems like it just doesn't.
Yeah, like, what's the difference between block and parry?
Yeah, I have no idea. Block only reduced the damage incoming by like half. Parry would like prevent the attack entirely.
Well, it's short for Perry Farrell.
Oh,
so he'll come and sing a song to you.
Oh, okay, that's nice.
Yeah, it's good that I don't know how they managed to license like the entire Jane's Addiction and Porno for Pyros book for for this. What do you call that? What do you call a band's repository? Their catalog? Their entire catalog?
Their oeuvre?
I guess that's if you want to get fancy about it. You're only allowed to say that if you're drinking tea.
I am.
Oh. Yeah, but you're drinking like future cyberpunk tea out of a can.
Does it have gears on it?
It's got brain drugs in it. Oh, cool. That's what we've been playing.
Yes.
Kevin, what's new?
The most exciting thing is that Chris Roberts announced... he's the guy that was the lead designer on Wing Commander way back in the day and games like Freelancer and stuff. He announced a project that he's been working on for a year or two now called Star Citizen. I don't know if you guys saw this at all.
Does it promise to be the Star Citizen of video games?
It's it reminded me, as someone who's not played Eve Online, it reminded me of like sort of a more interesting, more compelling version of Eve. The idea is that it's like a universe where you, it, like a persistent online multiplayer universe where
Palms, I think they call that.
Okay. Basically modeled after like sort of the last days of Rome, where there's this really widely stretched empire, where being a citizen is like a really big deal. Like if you belong to if you're a citizen of the empire or whatever, that's a huge deal. And so part of the game is actually like achieving your citizenship. So there's like a whole single player style campaign where you join the military and then you have just like a ton of like military missions that you have to go on, which you can do alone or you can have your friends, you know, come and be wingmen for you or whatever.
Except eventually no one can ever become a citizen because the something awful goon brigade comes in and just blockades all of the quest critical warp beacons.
I mean, maybe it's all instanced or whatever.
I mean, according to you, Kevin, that would be the best thing that could happen.
Probably. I mean, it would be interesting, right? But then the idea is that you can...
No, I like seeing people's dreams shattered, too. I love it when a dude works on a game for 10 years of his life and then something awful just comes and destroys it. Ha-ha! That was a good story.
In addition to, like, the military option, you could also just buy citizenship by, like, just issuing the military and just, like, being a traitor. T-R-A-D-E-R.
Can you buy it with microtransaction currency?
I don't know. I doubt it.
Can you just like, if you buy the collector's edition, you're just a citizen to begin with, and so it's just like, yay!
So you only get half the game.
I mean, I think becoming a citizen doesn't end the game. It's like one of those like status symbols that now you like can sort of do whatever you want and wander around the galaxy.
Okay.
You can...
So it's like becoming the Archmage in Skyrim and also the president of the Thieves Guild and maybe also the head vampire duke.
Maybe. He also talked about how like he wants to, his vision at least is to like add content on like a weekly or bi-weekly basis, creating sort of like new star systems sort of at the edges of the map or whatever. And if you are one of the first people to find it, and like if you're the first one to navigate through the like whatever space folds, I guess they were talking about, you could potentially get to name
space holes
and stuff. Space.
Oh, awesome! Folds. I'm gonna trek on out to Doglord 420.
Yep.
On my way to Spick Nasty.
Yep.
100 or whatever.
Yep.
That is my favorite space systems.
Yep.
Yeah. What was the the chunky feces belt?
Yes.
Yep.
That was we had this plan, which we did not tell anyone about in Kingdom of Loathing, which we put in this sort of elaborate puzzle for unlocking a new area. And when what we agreed was that whoever unlocked it, it would become known as That Person Island. And we got lucky in that a person who was not named Vaginal Blood Fart or Bob Hope's Lesbian Golf Cart. Man, it was so great. We got a report of offensive names from some concerned player in like 2004, and it was still Vaginal Blood Fart and Bob Hope's Lesbian Golf Cart were definitely the highlights. So there were a lot of them that were just like, you know, I hate fags or whatever. I'm like, all right, we're going to ban that guy, but Bob Hope's Lesbian Golf Cart, that was pretty good.
Yep. Ban that guy, no way. We're going to put a star next to his name.
Yeah, so it became El Vibrato Island instead of Chunky Feces Island.
Yep.
Or even something
well,
like,
because
you know,
it was all sort of mechanoid related stuff.
Yeah,
and I mean, you know, it makes it sound like there are tropical islands with Hispanic sounding names,
mm-hmm.
Latin sounding names.
So they're looking for some crowdfunding for this game, and I think it's interesting because they are not going through Kickstarter. I think people are starting to realize that giving 5% to Kickstarter when you're looking for $2 or $3 million of funding is like a huge chunk. And so they're just building their own individualized crowdfunding sites.
Hmm. Well, I mean, if the difference is that the millions of people that already typically hang out and look at Kickstarter and find out about stuff through Kickstarter, and I don't know, just the cachet that Kickstarter already has. Mm-hmm. Is that not worth that 5%?
Well, Kickstarter only really works for a $1 million project if you're already a big name and there are already people that know about you, right? Like, it's relying on press coverage because of who you are. And I don't know. Our aforementioned buddy Chris talked about going to some thing which characterized Kickstarter as a methodology for monetizing social capital.
Wow.
Which, I mean, that is not unlike how I would describe how it actually pans out. But man, does that make it sound gross?
Yeah.
So I mean, somebody. So the challenges then are.
But people who
reaching
are unknown
people,
have also gotten huge successes because
they have. But those stories are rare, and I think that those stories should maybe put dollar signs in people's eyes. But the stories that actually put dollar signs in people's eyes are the Tim Schafers and the David Cranes. the Chris Avalon. The Jane Jensen. I don't even know if that was not a wildly, you know. So there are a lot of board games that do crazy well on there because it's like, oh, that's a neat thing. And
Miniatures one was.
And the thing about a board
crazy.
Game, like, it kind of makes sense to me that that's a thing that will really just rocket on Kickstarter, because for a given board game that you make, there probably are 10,000 people who would buy it and play it a couple times if it was a competently designed and executed game.
Right.
And there is no fucking way that through traditional channels
that
would be sufficient to actually get something made. But like with like the physical things being just way, way easier for some random dude to get manufactured with no connections, and with Kickstarter being what you do instead of finding distribution and taking up space on, the shelves of failing brick and mortar game stores that are reluctant to buy anything because they don't have any money. Like, it's not at all surprising that thing, which a very small number of people with a lot of disposable income are very excited about.
Yeah,
you know, Kickstarter sort of lets them mobilize. So to do your own crowdfunding, what are you actually eschewing from Kickstarter? You're eschewing payment processing, which you can do on your own.
Yep.
Yeah.
The escrow, which is trickier, right? Like, I am not entirely sure how that even works. With Kickstarter.
I mean, so
do they put a hold?
They just put a hold.
Do they put a hold on it?
Yep. They put a hold and then collect at the end if it funds. Indiegogo, I think, does the same thing, except for you can also set it up such that you get even partial funding if you want. Kickstarter has no partial funding things. So doing your own crowdsourcing.
Yeah, and you know what?
Stuff,
I would not ever support a project. Well, so if you get the partial funding, then it's no longer a Kickstarter. Like, the escrow and the only paying off if it succeeds is, in my mind, what kind of defines it. I don't think that I would contribute to an Indiegogo that wasn't already funded if they were going to get the money, whether it funded or not. Because that isn't, why are you on Indiegogo? Why are you not just on a webpage that says, give me some money, please?
Mm-hmm. I mean, Indiegogo allows you to put up things that are, like, for charities and stuff, too. So, like, if in that case, it makes sense to get whatever amount is raised.
That makes sense in that particular case.
Right. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know.
I kind of want to start a project that is the game of Go, except instead of white and black, it is white and indigo, and so it's called Indigo Go on Indiegogo.
That's pretty good.
Oh, and also Harrison Ford dances in really tall boots. That's in the commercial.
Okay.
So I need to do a Kickstarter to get some money to pay Harrison Ford to go dance. He might. He seems like a cool guy.
I mean, maybe if just you play some Sega with him.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, so then there's the escrow, which is an issue. You can have it go on as long as you want, but then it really isn't any different than just having a PayPal link and a website that says, this is what I'm going to do. Give me some money.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and
it's, it, but it,
and that so was Kickstarter certainly has, a successful model for certain things.
It's opened up this model where you have like tiers of rewards for stuff that's like 2 years in the future. And like it's just, it's created a vocabulary that people are now comfortable with. And I'm curious whether...
Well, it has certainly made it cool, right? I mean, it's a, it is a thing that is fashionable now. It makes you feel good about yourself because you're like, really what you're doing is just buying something, but what you feel like you're doing is giving to a worthy cause, you know, supporting somebody
in some cases, buying somebody some bootstraps.
Because
like you, sometimes you get stuff, but sometimes all you get is like, thanks, you know, like sometimes it really is donation. Speaking of thanks, I'd like to thank Just Ray for backing our Kickstarter.
Oh, okay. In that case, I will thank Fat Fatchery, and also I'd just like to rethank Mr. Lieutenant Time Bonkers.
Yeah, Riff's been fidgeting with the slip of paper that says Mr. Lieutenant Time Bonkers on it, which makes me jealous because I haven't gotten to read the phrase Mr. Lieutenant Time Bonkers very many times today.
I could loan it to you.
You know what I would like to say? Thank ye kindly, Alex! Because I was asked to do that in a ridiculous accent.
Okay. Oh, nice.
All right. So, anyway. Other news. I'm going to move on. Speaking of extremely long-term projects that you could have given money to that might have just seemed like a donation because it was probably never going to come out, theoretically, sequel to Fool's Errand is coming out on October 26th.
Yep. Yep. Cliff Johnson sent me the email with the pre-order password that since I pre-ordered it, what, like 6-8 years ago.
Do you have any inclination? Do you have any memory of how much you paid?
No, I don't.
Was it because it's $40? I'm gonna. Okay,
it was not that much. I don't think. I feel like it was probably 15 or 20.
Man, I feel like. I am normally not a guy who will bitch about how much things cost, and I will often play devil's advocate against people who bitch about how much things cost, but that
seems pretty high.
If it is just like the Fool's Errand, only more and on modern hardware...
I think it's in color.
Okay. That's not...
I know, I'm kidding.
You know, I mean, for a color television, I would pay $40 more than a black and white television, I guess, if it were 1950.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm curious to see how it plays out. I mean, I'm definitely in the camp that's just going to wait and see what people think of it after it's already out.
I mean, I'm in the camp where he's charging too much, so I'm just going to pirate it. That's clearly what he wants me to do. Oh. Fucking Wall Street fat cat software behemoths.
In news about paying too much or too little for something, the word came out that OnLive, which was that like theoretical thing where you could play games like on running on really awesome hardware on the internet, and then it would just be
ported. Powered by the dreams of Phyllis Diller. I remember this.
And I played, like, I was able to play Mass Effect on my Mac in a browser, and it seemed fine to me.
You were able to pretend to play Mass Effect. I wouldn't.
Yeah, your subscription to OnLive comes with this bottle of pills.
So OnLive was once valued.
And I walked into your office. You weren't even at your computer, Kevin.
It was once valued at over $1 billion. It was like $1.2 billion, like a valuation or whatever. And people have put tens of millions of dollars into it in terms of like angel investor funding and stuff like that. It sold for $5 million when it sold recently, and so I don't know what that. I don't know if that means that this whole like, because Gaikai, which was like basically the same thing, just slightly different technology, sold for like $340 million.
Now, I've been meaning to talk to you about that. You also were just hallucinating that, Kevin. All of these things. All of the things that you've been seeing in the past few months that you think are magic.
Huh. Well.
Yeah. Our air conditioner is broken in a way that just the office is constantly filled with a mist of LSD. And it's been a real problem for some of us. Riff, okay, so Riff can handle it.
Yeah, maybe I'm the fool in his all over it.
Riff can maintain, so he's just doing his job and
stuff. I've just been sitting in the living room watching Candle Cove and hanging out.
See, whereas I have just been sitting in the bathroom watching a candle, convinced that if I poop hard enough, I can light the candle with my mind.
I mean, eventually you...
Did it work?
Wait, I meant wish. Wish hard enough? I think so. That's one of the first things that LSD does, is it opens the doors of perception, makes it so you can't tell the difference between wishing and pooping. So
it's wish like in one hand, shit in the other.
Oh, I finally get it.
I mean, if the bathroom is filled
with... It's like
with
saying
methane.
Six of one, half a dozen of the other. It's the same thing.
Oh, you realize your big realization from the acid is that all things that your dad say are the same thing. Wait a minute. If a frog had wings.
Yeah. So that's the news.
Wow.
Good.
And that's all the news I can handle.
Hey, so our assignment, Link to the Past.
Yeah. So good.
Speaking of dad aphorisms, I remembered something that I didn't talk about on either of the previous two times when we were talking about this game. When this game came out, I was about as excited about it as a person could be. And we went to the store and we bought the game. And then when we got home, my dad said, "Well, did you finish that paper that I told you to finish last night?" And I said, "I did not." And he said, "Well, what you're going to do tonight, instead of playing Legend of Zelda: A Link to the Past, is you're going to sit upstairs and finish your paper. And then you're going to play this game tomorrow." I'm going to play this game tonight. And so I not only had to like sit and finish this paper instead of playing this game that I was more excited about than I had ever been excited about it, I had to listen to my dad.
Oh, wow.
Oh my God.
And he was hamming it up. He was like, "Wow." And I didn't want to go watch it because I didn't want to have all the stuff spoiled for me.
That's hilarious.
And I had totally forgotten about that.
Wow.
You know, I imagine he was pretty excited about the game, too. Because I thought about this, too. We played Metroid together, I think. But with Zelda, you know, I mean, you could have two separate guys in Metroid because you had the passwords. Mm-hmm. But it was way less, like, the system supported it a little less, obviously, you know. So, like, we both played through Zelda 1. Mm-hmm. I don't know that he ever played Zelda 2. I think he was just like, I don't like this. For the same reason he didn't like Super Mario Brothers. Mm-hmm. But, so that was, it took me an entire day before I got to play it. And then I had to fucking go to high school. And, you know, like, when you're in high school, you're not a grown-ass man. They only let you eat, like, half-stick bugs on a log. Right. You go up to the school cafeteria line and just say, "Yeah, I would like, you know, 900 calories of chips and salsa for lunch. You're supposed to give me that much lunch. All I want is chips and salsa." And they'll be like, "No, you'll eat this circular... individual size pizza or you'll eat nothing."
Circular? You had circular ones?
We had little... eventually they opened a place where they actually cooked pizzas in the cafeteria, but it was like a Charlie's pizza is what they called it. I don't know. It was just like a maybe a 5-inch diameter pizza. It's pretty good. You know, school lunch. Eventually we'd go to Taco Jose. I don't remember if that was what it was called or not. Taco Dons. He was the mafia lord.
Taco Dongs?
Yes, Taco Dongs. Dong tacos. That's what you can get at a you can get a brains taco, you can get a tongue taco. That's a lengua and cabeza. They call it a head taco. So I don't know if they just don't have a word for brains or if the word for brains in Spanish is especially unappetizing. I mean, they must have a word for it. You can get a tripa taco, or you can get a pito taco, which are like, I would like a taco with whistles in it, but it turns out that whistles, a little kid slang for dick.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Huh. Mm. So, yeah, Legend of Zelda.
Go
Zelda.
For it. I fucked up and didn't. I got through two of the Dark World dungeons, and then went around and you know, ran around and looked for things and got a bunch of like ancillary items and stuff. And then I started, and I read through walkthroughs and I was trying to find like interesting things about it, like the kind of stuff that I would be excited to learn about a game after I finished it. Mm-hmm. And found actually surprisingly little.
Really?
Yeah, like there is a bunch of stuff going on, but there is not. And there's a bunch of stuff like that you don't have to do, like getting your magic doubled and stuff. Mm-hmm.
Getting all the spells. But
you pretty much find everything. Two of the spells are required to complete the game.
Yeah, two of them are. The one, one of them is either not required or it's the thing you get out of the big chest in Ganon's Tower, which is where I am. I have two blank spaces left in my inventory.
Did you get Bombos?
Bombos. I don't remember.
The medallion that is just makes a fire explosion all around you?
No, that's the spell I'm missing.
Yeah, so that's just out in the world. You can get that as soon as you get to the... No? You might have to have the hammer to get to that part of the Dark World? I did discover some weird situations where there were, like, multiple solutions to a puzzle. Like, there's that grave that has the cape in it that you can either just get to it in the Light World once you have the Titan Mitt and can pick up the black rocks, or you can get to it by transitioning back from the Dark World in a particular spot, which was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I think I got it by transitioning back. Riff, you were talking about how long the fifth Dark World dungeon was, and I felt like it was like longer than other dungeons up to that point, the puzzliness of it seemed really cool to me, because it seemed like...
Yeah, it was cool. What happened to me in that dungeon was that I missed a key I neglected to pick up a skull that was important, and then every other time I passed that skull, I assumed that I had already checked
everything up. Okay.
I have a little bit of a problem with them putting keys in skulls.
It wasn't a key. There was a switch under that skull. Yeah.
You think of skulls. And maybe it's because of later games, but I think of skulls and pots in Zelda as things to save for when you are not at max capacity on bombs, missiles, or hearts.
Right.
Which then, playing it with save states, you're never... not at max capacity. So I just think, well, I shouldn't just pick these up and waste, because a lot of times that, you know, the, I don't exactly understand how those things respawn, but once you've picked up a skull and unleashed the heart in it, then you can't get that heart again. So you might need it later. And so in the cases where they put keys under some random skull in the last of a row of skulls or whatever, it's like,
I mean,
it's creating two conflicting desires in my head, and I don't think it is doing so for any good reason.
I don't know. I mean, it forces you to explore and use resources. Like, you know, they could give you a million potions, and then you'd be able to use them all the time, and you wouldn't feel bad about it. But if they only give you 20 potions, you're gonna ration those out. And it becomes,
it is the very act of trying to ration them out that makes it so I don't want to pick up every skull that I see, which often renders me unable to find a key.
Yep.
Is the point that I'm making. I mean, I
think that's interesting.
You know, in the original Zelda, sometimes an enemy would have a key, but you could see it on them.
Right.
You know?
And that, it's not like that in this
Which
one.
Is different. I mean, it's a different... puzzle, right? Do the enemies ever drop keys?
Yep.
I think, once or twice at least.
Not a lot, but sometimes.
Man, I got stuck in again, like in the first dungeon, where you think that those guys are armored, and that you need the, you know, and there's just that weird, like, what seems like a paradoxical lock and key and lock puzzle, but it isn't one. I had this sense that at the point in the game that I was at, I could go get the flippers. I could go get the thing that was up in the northeastern part of the map in the shallows. And I went up there and I really thoroughly explored it. And then I was like, oh, no, I guess not. And left, because I hadn't walked all the way up to the tip of the shallow water, which you have to trigger the thing coming out. And so then I was like, well, fuck. I guess I must have to come back there later. And then I went and I'm like, no, you got to be able to swim to get into this dungeon. So then I just like looked at a walkthrough and it was like, oh yeah, go back to that place that you just were, but walk 1 inch further north.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, you know what? I remember this exact fucking thing happening to me both of the other times I played this game. Like,
huh.
For whatever reason, that didn't look like a thing that you were supposed to walk up into. Hmm. It just looked like another dead end because it was in a maze that was filled with dead ends. And why, when you've spent all this time wandering around these shallows, would you walk all the way up to the end of another dead end?
Somebody tells you to walk up there, though. Like, somebody says you need to go, you know, like so-and-so hates. Oh, it's you have to throw something into the water.
Yeah, but that's a different thing. That's a place in the dark world that you throw something into that circle of stones.
I thought that's where you got the flippers.
No, you just walk up to a spot. You just walk up to a dead end in the shallows, and Zora pops out and sells you the flippers.
Huh.
I don't remember what you get for throwing the thing into the circle, but I think it's optional.
That might be the magic, I guess, then.
I think it's one of the magics, so it's not optional.
Oh.
Huh.
I don't even remember if that's in the dark world or not.
Yeah, hell, I don't remember anymore. We've been playing this
game.
If
it is one of the magics, then it's one of the non-optional ones because I don't have the optional magic.
You know what I felt like was kind of annoying was the interface for that fucking fountain where you increase your bomb and arrow capacity.
I dumped a lot of money into that.
But the fact that you had to do it 20 at a time and the default was like, oh, accidentally did 5 that time and it like didn't re-trigger the dialogue.
It advances after a while.
Sure.
But I haven't
even found that fountain yet. I have been playing without spoilers, so I feel like I'm definitely missing
some
stuff.
I've been playing without spoilers except for that one dang key I lost in that dungeon. And I ended up having to look at a walkthrough for how to deal with the chain chomps in Turtle Rock because I couldn't figure it out. But upon looking at the answer, I was like, oh, I totally could have figured that out if I was a little bit more patient and had explored more thoroughly. So just as always happens when I look at a walkthrough, I feel dumb for having done so. But
I'm currently
other than those two times, I've gone through the whole thing without it. And I'm short 8 heart pieces and whatever that and that optional spell and one other thing, assuming that if the big chest
cane?
In Ganon's tower is not that last thing.
So, did you get the cane that you have to walk through that whole cave with the spikes on it and stuff?
Yeah, I got that, but at that point I was just following a walkthrough.
Okay. It
believe it is optional because it's just a defensive thing. I think both the cape and the cane are optional.
No, the cane is not optional. The cane of Samara or
no,
whatever?
The cane of Berna.
Oh.
The one that just makes the little light beam run around you that is like a defensive thing.
That might be the thing I'm missing then.
If it's in the bottom row.
Yeah.
That might be
I bet it is.
I'm currently stuck where I can't figure out how to get down into the lower to left-hand corner of the Dark World. And like, because I spent a bunch of time trying to like port in there from the light world or like try to cleverly
the
dark world or whatever. I'm guessing that maybe there's like a whirlpool that I need to find or something now. But I don't know.
The dark world version of the desert, you mean?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you want me to say?
No, I'll keep playing and try to figure it out. I have beaten this game. I beat this game when I was a kid, so I know that it's not beyond me. To do that.
Yeah, I mean, I played all the way through it as a kid before there were spoilers, and then I played it again in college when it probably, I think that was before the time when it occurred to me that the internet could be a source of
information,
arbitrarily just be a source of spoilers for anything. Yeah. I mean, I remember printing out Mortal Kombat 2 move lists from Usenet.
Oh, that would have been awesome.
In high school, but I don't remember thinking, oh, I want to know something about a video game. The internet is where I should go for that because before the web, it wasn't right. I maybe stumbled into that on Usenet or occasionally would stumble into some video, like some random video game archive on Archie or something. Mm-hmm. Archie.
Yeah. I wonder when I first made that realization.
Hit back, high punch, Archie. You'll cut the head off. This is Edith Bunker explaining how to do a fatality in Mortal Kombat 2.
Thanks for clarifying.
Cool. So what we decided to do, because I am going to be on a road trip for most of the time in between now and the next time we record an episode, is that we each decided to pick more or less at random right before the show an iOS title, and we're going to do three fairly new iPhone games as assignments. Kevin, what's yours? Because I want the most shameful one to go first.
I know nothing about it other than the screenshots, which looked kind of neat. I chose the number one app on the App Store right now, which is Bad Piggies.
Which is, as I understand it, a sequel to Angry Birds.
It's made by the same people. It's from the pig's point of view, and it looked like it might be an Incredible Machine style game where you make a thing and then you like try to maneuver it through a level, which that sounds awesome. If that's
or like that Fantastic Contraption game. Do you remember that Flash game where you could put different wheels on things and there were like wood beams and water beams that you could
kind of, I remember.
And your goal was just different in every level. Sometimes you were trying to like push a thing into a space you were just trying to, there was a particular thing that you were trying to get into a region.
Hmm. Yeah, like a star.
And so you had to make something that would like snake its way up a tube.
Yep. So, I mean, this might be terrible. You know, I'm not going to defend it before I've even had a chance to see it. So
mine is just a game that I was excited about because it seems to just be a Dungeon Raid ripoff, but it was described as a Dungeon Raid ripoff that's slightly better than Dungeon Raid, which, like, Whopper was one of those, and fucking great. And so it is called Dungeon Story.
Mm-hmm. And I picked something called Kumo Lumo, where apparently you are a very cute cloud that defeats enemies by raining on them.
Described as a rain-em-up?
Yeah, a rain-em-up. I don't know anything about it other than that, but the art looked attractive and it was free.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's $2. That's $2 worth of iOS games for listeners who want to play along, and maybe we'll have some opinions on these things. And so that was the assignment. Hey, guys, how about some listener's mail?
I think that's an excellent idea. Listening to the Idle Thumbs Ruination cast has pumped me up for, I don't know, doing reader
Doing a 4-hour show of nothing but questions and answers.
Yeah.
Hypnobono says, is Tila Jones, one of our Kickstarter backers, because I'd like to hear what she has to say, or he, I don't know. These gender things, I feel bad, because I don't know who's who.
We need one of those gender neutral pronouns.
Yeah.
Let's see what women with a Y and another Y thinks.
Where do you put the other Y?
In place of the W.
Okay.
Huh.
Yeah. Y, it's Y. Women, but a Y in place of the W and an E in place of the first E. O. E-O. Hypnobono says, how do you take care of your discs? I always had trouble with getting them smears, nicks, scratches, bite marks, etc. You know, I even now, I could go into my garage where the box of my CDs sits, and I could pull all of them out, and I could tell you with 100% accuracy which ones I never loaned to anyone and which ones I did. Because the ones that I loaned to somebody would come back with scratches and like little pieces of gravel embedded in them and dog chew marks and like blood stains, and the ones that were mine were fucking just pristine, because it's not that fucking hard don't ever for even one second ever put a CD anywhere other than in a device that reads it or in the fucking jewel case. Problem solved.
I tend to keep mine in stacks on the spindles that you buy blank CDs on.
You are part of the problem.
Well, it's fine so long as you're not like spinning them around all the time. I mean, if the spindle sits on the corner of the desk and the discs don't move, so they're fine.
There have been multiple times when I have destroyed by accident a CD of a friend of mine because I stepped on what I thought was a pile of garbage in the floorboard of their car. And there was one of their CDs, shiny side gravel.
Wow, what?
In the fucking floorboard of their car under a McDonald's bag. Like, oh man, you broke my Roger Klein and the Peacemakers CD. And I'd be like, no, no. I did. What I tried to do was sit in your car with my feet where they go, but I couldn't because of the McDonald's bags. Huh? I'm sorry I broke your CD, but that was totally not my fault.
That CD is probably already no good anymore.
I mean, they'll take a lot of abuse and still operate, but yeah. Man.
I for a while I tried to keep all my CDs in like a binder that had like the sleeves, I guess, for them or whatever, because it was a lot more compact mm-hmm. than trying to carry around all the cases.
All my PS2 games are in a big wallet like that because I didn't want to have to cart a giant crate full of PS2 game boxes out here when I could just do it in a giant wallet.
Did you throw them away?
I had a couple
what,
of
the boxes.
Yeah.
I had a couple of CDs get scratched though, and I was like, "Fuck this!" And then I went back to jewel cases because I had kept all the jewel cases because I'm sort of compulsive like that.
I am glad that I no longer really do anything that requires me to have a lot of physical media around.
Yeah, now I just rip.
Or at least my supply of physical media stopped about 5 years ago and has not gotten any bigger.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was like, "All right, well, I bought a house that these will fit in." So
that's where I'm keeping. I would say about half of the music I buy is on disc and half is digital. And then when I buy a disc, I just rip it to MP3 and then put the disc
in. I haven't gotten a physical music CD in years that was not a video game soundtrack that came as part of a collector's edition.
I've gotten a few. And you know what? In most cases, there was a long period of time where I had gotten a new video card and my power supply didn't have enough outlets in it, and I didn't have a splitter, so I just disconnected my optical drive, and it stayed like that for like a year, because the new video card took two power inputs, or just took an additional power input, which is not a thing my previous one had, and so I would buy a CD, and then when I went to rip it, I was like, oh right, my DVD-ROM drive doesn't have any power, so I would just download a torrent of.
You have like 12. You have like 12 computers though, so you should be able.
Yeah,
to
but only one that's there on my desk.
Sure.
Like I'm not going to, because like when I want to rip CDs, I always have like a pile that have been waiting for me to rip them, and so I want to do them at a computer that I can also sit at and use. So I don't want it to be like the laptop in the studio or like my iPhone.
Do you remember like when you first digitized your music collection? Because like that, I remember being like a multi-day project for me.
Yeah.
I went back and did more of that not too long ago.
Like at a higher bit rate or something, or just
no, just to get the ones that I hadn't got around to yet.
I actually, for the most part, the girlfriend that I had at the time was doing hers, and she was like, I would also like to get copies of yours. And I was like, okay, I will let you rip all of my CDs, and then I will take the directories that you make. So that worked out okay. She had a job where she only worked like 2 days a week, so she had nothing. She had nothing to do while I was out winning the bread. I don't have time to rip CDs. I got to do important things with a computer.
Yeah, like
draw stick figures, write fart jokes. Vlad Tepes, I wonder if that's good old Vlam Slamshank of radio KOL question asking fame. Anyway, a question for all: what are your top five games and why? Whoa!
Oh, I need some notice before I can answer.
Let's come back to this. The Dog Delusion says: have any of you guys seen The King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters? If you haven't, yes. I recommend it, especially if arcade games and arcade culture is of interest to you.
I have not. I hear
oh,
it's
man.
Good.
No, you need to.
Yeah.
Is it on? It's on Netflix streaming, right?
I
bet you can watch it on Netflix streaming.
I think I had
streaming.
To get the disc. Although, you know, a lot of documentaries are on streaming, so maybe not. You should...
it is pretty good.
Your plan, the thing that you haven't got a name for yet, it's not streaming. It's just in disc form.
Oh, we've talked about it. The convention?
Yeah. Have we?
Yeah.
I can't remember if we talked about it on the podcast or not.
Yeah, we don't have a name for it yet. We came up with a bunch of terrible ones. We came up with a really good name for it, and then it turns out that that's apparently the name of... at least to noted lady Rachel Bess, a well-known like BDSM organization in Arizona. I don't know that some organization of sexual deviance that she's familiar with is an organization of sexual deviance that has widespread recognizability. But
if I search for Apex in Phoenix, it comes with the Arizona Power Exchange.
So. Is that not it?
Maybe it is. I thought that was like an actual electrical thing, but I guess not.
It sounds like it. Yeah, it certainly sounds like not a thing that is a bunch of people hitting each other with big dildos or whatever.
Oh, yeah, I guess this totally is. Okay.
Huh. I don't know. People who have sex. What? Yeah, anyway, so we're, and it actually seems to be, it seems to be getting there. We're negotiating with a venue.
Yeah.
To try to gain the ability to do things such as sell tickets.
Why is that it's, so hard?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it wouldn't be the end of the world if we just had to use their box office and sell tickets day of. It's just not, it's not the way I'd planned it, like Britney Spears said. So our contact person, Stephen King, needs to show me how he wants it to be. He needs to tell me, because I need to know now, because I want to get this fucking convention planned. That was part of what we were doing this weekend, was talking to dudes about their video games and could we borrow their video games to have a convention on them.
Yeah.
And also, we need to make tickets half price for little kids, except that they get in for free if their hands and faces are adorably covered with chocolate sauce. That's the thing that is going to convince these collectors to bring their pristine, carefully cared for pinball and arcade machines. Also, everybody gets a free water balloon, yeah, when they walk in.
Our new sandblaster special.
Also, it's one of those like frat beach parties where we've covered the floor with sand. Tsunami time. Anyway, we're not actually doing any of these things, so if you are a Phoenix area pinball machine or arcade game collector, do not despair, and when Wes calls you, don't say, I've got your number, buddy, with your sloppy douchebag friend and your sexual deviant wife. Not coming to your convention. Anyway.
Man, there is a ton of good TV that I could be watching in bed at night instead of Minecraft Let's Plays, it turns out.
It never occurred to me that there wouldn't be a lot of stuff worth watching more than Minecraft Let's Plays.
Yeah. Sometimes
you want to play Minecraft, but your fingers hurt, and so you have to just watch other people playing it?
Well, no. I mean, part of it is that I started watching them because of the guys that do the Let's Plays that I watch are good redstoners, and so I'd watch for
redstoners.
Watch the tutorials of the gadgets they did, but they were also just generally entertaining talkers, and so I kept watching their various videos, and then just kind of got into the habit.
The redstoners were like a problematic fighter plane squadron.
Sometimes they're really good for putting me to sleep too. So there's that.
Yeah, you should be watching TV. You should be falling asleep watching TV instead of falling asleep watching guys.
I'll watch Miss Marple or Columbo or Hercule Poirot or Foyle's War instead of a guy busting stones.
Glebe says, what do you think of HTML5 as a game development platform? Laser Mike is kind of at a crossroads, and one of the ways of making it more accessible is putting it into HTML5 with Game Maker Studios. It's either that or learn a real programming language. Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I don't know that the game is going to be any more accessible. I guess it is technically more accessible as an HTML5 game than it is as like a downloadable executable. Mm-hmm. But I have yet to see anything apart from that port of Bastion that has really blown me away as an HTML5 game.
That was not HTML5 because that was specific to Chrome. That was using, well, I mean, I think it was some extended set of.
Yeah, but I think it was just JavaScript and HTML. I don't think it's not running. So, like, I think maybe only Chrome supports the specific features of the spec that it was using. I don't know. I don't know. you know, it's going to be, there's just going to be stuff that you can't do. It's going to be wildly dependent on, it's kind of like how The Binding of Isaac performs like ass, even though it shouldn't, because it's a Flash game, you know, because it's like you're basically running it on an emulator that just makes it so your hardware is not nearly as powerful as it should be. And running something in the environment of a browser, like, that's not really what the browser is for. And
it's
so
not,
it doesn't support it.
It's not HTML5 at all, the Bastion thing. It's
well,
it's,
fine. It's a, never mind. A, then I've literally never seen a single impressive thing. Are you happy?
At all. Ever.
Kevin?
Anywhere.
Man, his whole life has just been one boring, bleak-ass thing after another.
What was that MMO?
That HTML5 MMO, the pixely one where you could go and hit a thing with a sword. Yeah, it was that proof of concept,
right,
that multiplayer thing. Proof of concept thing.
Realm of the Mad God.
No.
Are you sure?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's not it.
Then we're thinking of different things because that's totally the
name
of
a pixely
MMO.
No, we totally played
it.
You could go and there was a skeleton.
Yeah.
We all played it and we talked about it. We had all seen it. It was like a proof of concept MMO, like a multiplayer HTML5 game that was, it was like Zelda style play and graphics. And this is not, none of the things that I just said were true of Realm of the Mad God.
All right, well, what's Realm of the Mad God then?
Okay, Realm of the Mad God is like a shooter.
Flash game too, isn't it?
It's, I'm pretty sure it's in Flash. It is multiplayer. Man, it is not Legend of Zelda style graphics. It's like Atari style graphics.
Nah, it wasn't as bad as Atari.
This Google native client thing is actually really interesting. It's actually running like x86 code. It's like running, like, it's actually like emulating a PC in a browser.
I bet that's super fast.
I mean, have you played Bastion? It runs totally fine.
Yeah, right? Like, maybe it does. I heard that there wasn't any sound. I did. That's
really
what I heard about the Chrome port of Bastion, yeah.
Oh, wow. So for the game, we're like, the two notable things about it are the narration and the music. That sounds pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you can make a game that is good and that a lot of people will play with Game Maker if you're really good at it, like Derek Yu.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
But
I mean, he knew real programming languages before he started messing with Game Maker, which it would be rough to go from no programming to trying to do anything important or complicated in GML, because GML has a lot of things about it that are total bullshit.
Man, I wish HyperCard would come back. HyperCard was when I was at like the peak of my programming prowess.
What kind of things did you do in HyperCard? Did you make a thing to... Did you make a Shadowrun dice roller?
I made a Paranoia character generator.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. See, I figured it was that kind of... I figured it was that kind of project, just given the era and your predilections. Did you ever make anything in HyperCard, Kevin?
No, I did not.
I still actually don't know what HyperCard is. I always assumed it was like Windows card file, which is just like a Rolodex.
It's not entirely dissimilar to Flash Action Script.
Flash Action Script would be a good name for a hero,
a
superhero.
Would.
No, just
put
a
that
hero.
In the NPC.
You know, like a New York City fireman. Flash Action Script, I'm here to get your cat out of the tree. Hey, that's a weird... That's a weird name. Are you like, if the New Hampshire Action Smiths, Action Scripts?
Maybe it's, well, I mean, his mother's name was Script and his father's name was Action. When they got married, she had it hyphenated.
Okay. Is there anybody whose last name is Script?
I don't know. Is there anyone whose last name is Action?
I don't know.
I mean, there's Action Jackson, but that's his first name.
That's his first name? Yeah. That was Action, Jackson. So they accidentally got his name wrong in that phone book that's enchanted to suddenly become reality.
What?
No, there's that one phone book that anything written in that phone book becomes true if it wasn't already true.
Are you making this up or is this a reference to something else?
A little of both, I guess.
Okay.
It's part of the world, right? Like this is... For all we know, it could be like because to us, it would be indistinguishable from just a really accurate phone book.
So it's sort of quantum, I guess.
All right, I think that's enough. That's enough, listeners. Mail. We've definitely helped some people here today, gentlemen.
And I guess we should try and decide what our top five games are, so we can say next week or next time or whatever.
I'm always sort of so dubious. Hard. Like, I feel like that kind of question is a good. It's like an excuse to get into a conversation with a girl you're trying to fuck. Or something, but it's not like, you know, it's like what albums would you take to the desert island?
If that is this person's motive in this situation, then he's going about it
all
wrong.
No, but I'm saying there's a period of time in your life where you can learn things about people by you know, putting these like really specifically framed questions into play in like a group of people who's just going to be sitting around talking at a Denny's all night. And I don't know, like, I kind of wouldn't know where to start with a top five games, because, like,
I mean,
there are things I've gotten from games.
Probably, right?
Really?
Like, yeah, World of Warcraft is definitely in my top five. It's just, like, it was one of the most important games I've ever played in my life, right?
And, yeah, I guess it also depends how you define top. Like, what's the qualification you're
But I feel like the experience of playing video games is so
definitely in my top five.
The experience of playing a game does so many things and pushes so many different buttons that I don't know, like, I don't know that there is an axis on which I can compare The Binding of Isaac and Photopia.
Yeah, okay.
Right? And so I don't know that I can make a list that is the top five if none of the games share any set of scoring criteria.
Minecraft, you know, is in my top five.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, there are some that, like, while I love a bunch of IF, like, there's no IF that I would put in my top five because it's not something that I would go back to or want to go back to all the time to play more and more of, right? Like,
right, but that's not, but that isn't the, that is not, like, the only meaningful thing. Like, Don't Look Back, right? Like, that is...
That's a great game. It's not going to be in my top five, but, like, I would say it might be one of... Like, it might be one of the best, like, artistic statement games ever made or something like that. You know, some sort of category like that, where I think it's definitely in the top five of some list.
But that's what I'm saying. I don't think that we...
Yeah, I feel like I could games, whatever that I could make a list of favorite games and pick five of them,
but there
I don't
are also
know if
probably 30 games.
Which the top five are, yeah.
I probably have 30 games that I cannot imagine them not being in my top five.
Right.
And I would have to just do this weird thing where I was like taking two M&Ms and squeezing them together until one of them broke. And then that would just be kind of random, right? Like, it would depend on what order I thought of them in, and yeah. I don't think I can meaningfully answer that question. It depends on what the definition of is. Kevin already did. World of Warcraft, Minecraft, Star Control 2.
Star Control 2, yeah.
So that's, like, three of your five?
That's three of them, and I don't know what the other ones are. I mean, there's a bunch of other
fucking
games
move the fucking box, apparently.
No. Not at all.
I would have Riven would be in there.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Full Throttle.
Man, I feel like Riven would be on my bottom five.
Oh, Riven was so good.
Loading. Hold on. I need to change discs.
Vice City. Grand Theft Auto Vice City might be in there. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
Oh, I thought we were going to think about this at home and then come back
to it.
Well,
I mean, we could also do that.
No, but I mean, this is fun. Oh, okay. I'm having fun.
But yeah, definitely.
I got nowhere to be.
Full
it's
Throttle, I think,
noon.
Was probably my favorite LucasArts game.
I have actually never played Full Throttle.
Oh, you have to.
Okay,
go play Full Throttle.
Okay.
You know what might be in my top five if it were a game? Trevor Giblets or Jib Father, one of our awesome Kickstarter backers.
Okay.
Oh, well, in that case, my favorite game is Theocide.
Theocide, huh? What's a the? Like, that's the murder of a religion?
I guess.
The murder of a. Yeah.
The murder of.
On the floor, if you've read it.
The murder of Malcolm Jamal Theo. Warner.
Okay. Sure. All right,
and
man.
As always, I would also like to thank Mr. Lieutenant Time Bonkers.
Yeah, and also the sexy mancubus Justin Miller. Can you, Kevin,
yes.
explain to yes. our listeners, the listeners,
yes,
how to get a hold of us if they wanted to ask us a listener's question?
Yes, I can. One way.
Will you, then, is my follow-up question. Tell our listeners how to get a hold of us if they want to ask us a listener's question.
Well, I recommend tweeting at us, at VGHotDog, emailing us, VGHotDog@gmail.com, or checking out our forums, which you can find a link to at videogameshotdog.com. That also has all of our podcasts. I guess if you're already listening to that, you might already know about that. But maybe not, because maybe you just have it in your iTunes feed and you don't even know where it came from.
Yeah, or maybe you're streaming it and downloading each episode 10 billion times.
I looked at the VGHD, at VGHD on Twitter, and it's just somebody who tweeted like twice and then gave it up. And it just makes me angry.
Yeah, that's what almost everything is on Twitter. Yeah. You don't think that was the Virtua Girl HD account?
It wasn't.
That was like, oh, wait a minute. Nobody gives a shit about this anymore. This was a ridiculous idea when we had it. And the passage of time has only made it ridiculouser.
Yep.
All right. Well, I've had a good time doing this episode of Video Games Hot Dog with you guys. And I hope our listeners have had a good time.
I feel like this has been a good show.
Indeed. Have a great week, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. And now I kind of want to actually record some of my farts and have have them be in the game. I think that would just be like, it
most
would just be like
genuine fart noise.
I'm secretly farting on everyone who plays it, and nobody knows it except me and everyone who's listening to this.